Well, good afternoon. As I told you, the time is now 2:08:21. Welcome to Vox Pop and to Medical Monday. Joining us today to talk about integrative medicine is our friend, Dr. Ronald Stram. Dr. Stram began his career in emergency medicine and continues to serve as regional medical director of emergency medicine at hospitals throughout New York. He has turned his attention to prevention as founder of the Center for Integrative Health and Healing in Delmar, New York. Dr. Stram was trained by a world-renowned leader and pioneer in the field of integrative medicine, Dr. Andrew Weil. He's a graduate of the Mount Sinai School and is a board certified in emergency medicine. Dr. Stram, as always, Ron, welcome back to the Vox Pop. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you very much, Alan. It's a pleasure to be here.
The number to call is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. There are a lot of things that have come up. I want to talk to you. We got two people on the phone. Get on the phone, folks, and we'll get right with you. But in the meantime, I want to ask Ron two things. Eric and Anne-Marie, you stay right where you are. Ron, two things. There's been a major sort of re-emphasis on something we've known for quite a while. You want to tell everybody what it is?
Sure. It just came out today, and it's in the New York Times, that a study looking at over 7,000 patients in Spain that were put on three different diets, with a Mediterranean diet and low-fat diet, and that those that were on the Mediterranean diet had a 30% less likelihood of having heart disease. This did not take into account their cholesterol risk, the fact that they had high blood pressure, or either other heart disease. This was specifically only related to that diet. And it's quite a remarkable study, and it actually was stopped because the results were so dramatic. And this is, of course, things that we've known now for years, and the initial Lyon's heart study, which came out in 1999, showing that the Mediterranean diet can reduce heart disease, it's now even more confirmed with this New England Journal.
And didn't article. Framingham show some of this also?
It did.
Yes.
It did.
Framingham. Okay. So in any case, we have this. There's a second study that I want you to talk about a little bit.
Sure. There's a study that was, this is now the idea of the microbiome. And the microbiome is that we have 1 trillion cells in our body, and we have 10 trillion bacteria that inhabit some parts of our cell. Mostly it's in our gut.
That's a lot.
And what we now know, that it is not only that gluten or autoimmune diseases or things like maybe Parkinson's or fibromyalgia may be associated more with the fact that we have some autoantibodies that then develop. And autoantibodies means that your body starts fighting against itself, that this may be related to our microbiome and the fact that we have less of some of the bacteria that we had 50 years ago, because the prevalence now of autoimmune diseases is about 4 times greater.
What's an auto? Give us an example of what an autoimmune disease.
Autoimmune disease would be something like Crohn's disease is an autoimmune disease. Diabetes, type 1 diabetes, is a autoimmune disease. And in fact, in Finland versus Russia, they have actually this province called Karelia in Russia, is a very closely located near Finland. And it has very similar genetic pool. So they have actually the genetic predisposition to getting these autoimmune diseases, such as gluten sensitivity or diabetes. The only difference is that they have a different diet. Now, the Russians typically are about 50 years behind in terms of their food sources. They're much more locally grown food.
This is good.
Whereas the Finnish, they tend to have their food sources come from a much more industrialized, much more processed food source. When you look at a specific bacteria, and it is a bacteria that in adults is considered a negative thing to have, and that is Helicobacter bacteria. When you look at that in children, it's beneficial. Children that have Helicobacteria tend to have less likelihood of developing asthma, potentially diabetes, and allergic conditions.
Amazing.
So it's not only the genes, but it's the nurture nature concept of it takes the environment, it takes your lifestyle to really affect outcomes.
The guest is Ron Stram. All five phones, as I predicted, are being are in use right now. Let's go to Eric in, I don't know, where are you, Eric?
I'm in Boston Spa.
Okay, go ahead. What's your question?
My question is, and the doctor just hit on it with the last study. I've been diagnosed with fibromyalgia, and I'm on Cymbalta and a couple other pain control medications, but I have quite a bit of breakthrough pain, and I've tried to, you know, stay off the opiate type. Is there any idea, any advice he would give as far as diet? I've gotten the books out. I pretty much try to follow those diets, but I still have quite a few breakthroughs.
Right. Well, I think, you know, first off, looking at the whole picture. Now, is your fibromyalgia, do you have joint pain? Does it rove around? Does it go into your muscles at some point, then go into other joints?
I pretty much have, it pretty much affects my whole body. I mean, it's muscular, it's skeletal. It's about a 6 on a pain scale at a constant rate. And then when I have breakthrough days, I barely can, you know, get myself out of bed. But I know, you know, getting moving is the biggest thing. But so, I mean, it's always with me. It's a constant, you know, emotional breaking type thing. And I'm 40 years old, so it's really kicked me in the derriere.
Okay. Well, what I would say is what we tend to look at is we look at one. Do you have food allergies? Do you have allergies to certain foods? The most common would be, like I mentioned, wheat, gluten, corn, dairy. Those would be something that I would look at.
As far as allergies, I don't have any food allergies. I've done the rule out for triggers, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, the problem is that the food allergy testing, if it is a skin test, it may not be sensitive enough to see if you have actually other type of antibodies, and those are IgG antibodies that may cause this sort of inflammatory action. The other is that, you know, are there other symptoms here? Do you have night sweats? Do you have extreme fatigue? Do you have brain fog? Do you have other symptoms that may be suggestive of something else going on? And, you know, that's what I would say is to look at that, and that would be then looking at maybe some potential in the co-infections or infectious-related diseases that you may get from a tick-borne disease.
Eric, are you still there? Apparently not. Sorry about that. Let's go to Anne Marie in Cahos. Anne Marie, you're on.
Hi, Dr. Stram. This is Anne Marie Flanagan from Cahos.
Hi, Anne Marie. How are you?
Good. Would you possibly spend a little time discussing the possible relationship between Lyme disease and Parkinson's? I was diagnosed with celiac back in 06, Parkinson's last year, and Lyme disease has shown up in my blood.
Okay. Well, you know, the issue, again, is similar to what we were speaking about, that there is potentially a genetic predisposition for people that have certain infectious diseases that then can go on to developing either Parkinson's-like symptoms or multiple sclerosis-like symptoms, which Parkinson's, you tend to have this shaking, uncontrollable shaking, difficulty walking in terms of just being able to not lose your balance. Multiple sclerosis, you may have symptoms where you have numbness or weakness. You may have visual disturbances. And the idea is that with Lyme disease or some of these co-infections, since they sequester themselves, they actually hide in areas that are problematic. Those tend to be in nerve tissues, in gut tissues, in joints, that some people may have the symptoms of Parkinson's-like symptoms yet have actually a Lyme disease as a diagnosis. You know, this is the idea that in medicine, a symptom doesn't necessarily mean that then you treat the symptom and then you fix the disease. It is really looking at the whole system as who the person is. So what's your diet? What's your lifestyle? What's your genetic predisposition? What's the environment? And looking those all together, taking your symptoms and say, well, this is maybe suggestive for something other than just the diagnosis of whether it's fibromyalgia, irritable bowel syndrome, chronic fatigue syndrome, Parkinson's, that what is the causative relationship here? And that's what we look at.
Uh-huh.
Hey, I wish I could spend some more time with you, but thank you very much, Amy. Appreciate
thank
it.
You.
Yeah, bye. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. We're going to take a brief break, and we'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Anderson Center for Autism, Strasburg, New York, providing educational and residential programs, diagnosis, and treatments for children and adults. AndersonCenterForAutism.org. St. Francis Hospital and Health Centers, Poughkeepsie, serving the healthcare needs of the community, including trauma and emergency care, and the Center for Robotic Surgery, SFHospital.org. Wiawaka, Lake George, New York, an enrichment revitalization historic lakefront retreat created by and for women since 1903. Wiawaka.org for events. And the Birch School, Orange County, a new independent day school and center for homeschool classes, working to provide a child-centered, nature-based learning community for ages 4 to 17, thebirchschool.org.
And we'll go to Rachel in Holyoke. Okay, Rachel, welcome to the program. How are you doing?
Thank you. I just have a quick question. I'd like to know if the doctor knows whether the condition called idiopathic condylar resorption and the condyles that I'm referring to are in the jaw area. Are there any other treatment modalities other than surgery?
Well, you know, any time that you see idiopathic, it actually means that you don't know what it is and where it's coming from. What I would say is similar to what we spoke about, is that often when you have something, there is some causative relationship to it. It's just that we haven't either gotten the right test or figured out what it's from. What I would say is that if you're having this issue in your jaw, and it's obviously probably causing a lot of pain, is that just from this what I mentioned before in terms of diet, lifestyle, any other potential infectious diseases, is that you just look beyond just having a diagnosis. The problem with saying some idiopathic condylar resorption problem is that now you've already said what the diagnosis is, and the treatment, if the treatment is only trying to treat the pain or do a surgical intervention, then that may still not be what's getting the cause of why you have it.
But how do we know, Ron and Rachel, whether or not this is a dentistry problem? I mean, a lot of people have TNJ, things of that kind. A lot of people chew on their their teeth all night long. I'm one of them.
Right.
And that can cause that kind of pain, can it?
Absolutely. And so that would be where you go to a dentist, let them see if are you grinding your teeth at night, is some of the appliances that can be helpful in having people not grind their teeth, is that helpful for your pain? I think, yeah, I mean, looking at the different specialties that relate to that, going to ear, nose, and throat doctor who may be able to see, is that what it is? But I'd say on a systemic level, if those have been ruled out, then that would be the other idea to look at.
Well, have they, Rachel?
Well, it's interesting because I understand trying to figure out what the reason is a systemic, but my question really comes to resolution. How do you get the condyles to, build back up so that that's really what I'm trying to figure out, is that, now that it's that they have resorbed or, shrunk down, is there any way to get them back up to where they should be other than surgically?
Ron, can you remind us what a condyle is?
A condyle is just, it's part of the joint space where you have a condyle that fits into a socket. So that's typically what it is. So if you have a condyle resorption problem where you're actually losing it, that means that you're losing that joint area in your jaw and probably causing pain. I don't know of a way to actually improve your condylar structure without either doing surgery. But again, I would say, look at certain levels, vitamin levels. Do you have something why is it that you're pulling it out? And is it mechanical? Is it that you're grinding your teeth? Or is it something systemic, like you have a vitamin D deficiency or something like that?
And who could figure that out in this area out here where I live, which is in the Pioneer Valley, Hampden County?
Well, in Holyoke, you know, you may have some people that would look at a more integrative type of a way to look at things. A naturopathic doctor, they are licensed in Massachusetts. They may be more willing to look.
How do you
at
find
it.
That out? How can you find an integrative doctor?
I mean, you could look up integrative medicine doctor in your area. Now with Google and with search engines, you could do that. Naturopathic doctor in your area, and just make sure they're licensed and they have good credentials.
Okay, well, thank you so much.
Thanks, Rachel. Yep, okay. 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Jonathan in Norfolk. Okay, Jonathan, you're on.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I'd like to make an observation then, and I have a question. This is yet another survey that investigation that you have cited. But, you know, we've had surveys like this for years, and I would remind you that in the 1940s, there was a huge survey or experiment carried out in Britain when...
In World War II,
where they had very serious rationing.
Yep.
And essentially what they did is they reduced the total level of calories per person. They reduced substantially meats and fats and increased wheats and pulses.
Same result.
And the population was much fitter and healthier at the end than it was at the beginning.
Right. Unless, of course, they got killed by a bomb.
Well, there were only 50,000 killed by a bomb.
That's all.
That out of a population of 50 million is, what, 0.1%?
Unless you were one of them, Jonathan.
Yes, my parents were severely bombed.
Yeah.
And other people have said, you know, there are other reasons for it, but there's no doubt about it that by changing people's diets or forcing them to change their diets, they're healthier.
Yep.
The problem is the crooked timber of humanity doesn't want to do that.
Right.
My question actually to the doctor was somewhat different, which was the importance of integrative medicine. And one of the reasons, I believe, in the United States, while we have extremely expensive medicine, is because our medicine is over-specialized. And I wonder whether he would comment on that and whether a drive to make more integrated medicine would possibly help us reduce our medical costs.
It really is a great question.
Sure, that's a great question. So I will just say that I've been doing integrative medicine now for our practice has been going on for about 10 years now at the Stram Center. And what we see is that there is a significant rise in the population, in people looking for it. Right now, the way that medicine is set up, it is fee-for-service medicine. It is based on that you have a symptom and you're treated for the symptom. We are reimbursed as physicians when people, when patients are sicker. Unfortunately, the rule is that you don't want to kill the patient, but if you keep them sick, you get paid more. So we get paid by procedures or we get paid by volume. Integrative medicine really looks at the whole person. If it means that you need to spend a half an hour, 45 minutes telling someone about diet, if you were in a volume-based practice, that is going to be very difficult since the insurance companies right now pay for prevention only once per year, which would be very hard to have a compliance rate in terms of that. What I do believe, Jonathan, is that this tide is changing, is that people now recognize that that costly health care doesn't necessarily mean better health care, that good food is good medicine, that exercise and good food make a healthier person. And stress reduction, when you add all three of them together, create a healthy lifestyle. Those are where we want to get to. The bridges, such as medications or procedures, are all just bridges. They are not the road. And the road is good food, good medicine, is exercise and stress reduction.
But I think Jonathan's point is a very interesting one. I mean, we've got a primary healthcare people, Ron. And they are supposed to know it all. But what they do all too often is to send you to a specialist. So either you're going to a gynecologist or you're going to a pulmonary guy or you're going. So at what point are we going to get doctors who are able to, you know, do it all?
Well, I think, first of all, the problem now is that a lot of the primary care docs, because they're volume-based practices, they say, you know, it's somewhere about, what, 7 to 10 minutes per patient. You cannot get a history and develop a relationship with someone within that short period of time. So what do? You send them out to someone else that can maybe figure out that specific symptom, as opposed to looking at the whole person. The whole person is the only way to go, and I do believe that at least what I think with the integrative medicine movement is that is the way that the country
is. So how do you get paid?
Well, so as of about a year ago, we don't take insurance because insurance does not understand the need for time-based care as opposed to volume-based care. We look for outcomes. So if you're going to do a procedure, make sure that it works. The problem is the procedures right now, you get paid for the procedure whether it works or not. Look at coronary artery disease. Coronary artery bypass surgery, which is a great surgery. It bypasses the artery. It makes your chest pain go away. The problem is it does not prevent a recurrence in a heart attack. Why? Because unless you change the lifestyle, sure, unless you do what's needed for the whole person, then it won't change it. So that's how we work it, is that we don't, the insurance model for integrative medicine does not work.
I would just point out.
Can I make another suggestion,
sure,
here? And that is that essentially what you talked about here for a moment was diagnosis, because people do 10-minute diagnosis, how can it work? And then essentially they pass it on to someone who they think is the person who can handle you. So what about the opportunity that science may give us in the next 10 years of having constant monitoring and communications of key metrics in the body, i.e. the chip in the body type idea, such that you are constantly monitored by healthcare professionals, and as and when something happens, then a series of other things would happen, so that you can get at it relatively quickly. It's done efficiently, and people are healthier as a result.
Well, I think that has its merits. I think people still want to feel cared for by someone. You want to feel that someone cares about you, right? As a physician, as a care provider, what people expect is that you know your medicine. But what they want is that you care about them as a person. A chip and someone reading it from some distant area doesn't have that direct relationship, which I actually think is therapeutic. So, but thank you. They're excellent questions, and I really appreciate
Jonathan,
it.
Jonathan, thanks for the call. Okay, so let's go to Jamie in Ellenville. All right, Jamie, you're on.
Boy, I'll bring it all together for you. Back in 93, I got poisoned by anesthesia, got malignant hypothermic. And shortly thereafter, about 6 months, I was diagnosed with Crohn's. I had one point, I had 28 inches completely blocked. And then 10 years later, you tell me I got fibromyalgia, which to me are all code words, but we don't know what's wrong with you. But the things I'm curious about, like whether or not the malignant hypothermia killed off all the bacteria and viruses in my body, and that led to the development of this condition. Like every time I say this to doctors, they look at me like I got two heads.
Okay, let me just say, malignant hyperthermia is a very rare condition that does happen.
Lucky me.
Right. That
what
does
is
happen.
It, what is it, Ron?
So what it is there is a side effect or an allergic response to a certain medication. Typically, it's halothane or gas-like anesthesias.
Yes.
And those gas anesthesias cause a reaction in the person's body that says, get it out, and they become unbelievably high-temperatured.
I remember hearing someone say, oh, my God, it's 108.
Yeah, so they tend to start cooking. Literally. So normal body temperature, 98.6. They go to temperatures of 106, 107, 108, and it becomes a life-threatening emergency.
2 days in an ice bath.
And
so where does the word malignant come from?
Because then? Basically it's malignant, meaning it's going to kill you unless we do something to to right. recognize it.
So we associate the word malignant with cancer, but
right.
it's in other
but
situations.
But that's it's yeah. in another situation. Okay. Now, I mean, look, I think that you may also have one of these where when you look at populations of people that have, let's say, Crohn's disease or gluten sensitivity, they have something called an HLA haplotype, which is human leukocyte antigen. They're more prevalent to have this antigen. The issue is that actually when you look at populations like in Russia that don't have the food sources that we have, and they're much more whole foods and they eat a lot of grains, they eat a lot of wheat, but they also have a much higher likelihood of having sort of a lot of good bacteria in their gut. Now, those people tend to have a much lower rate of what would be typical for, let's say, Crohn's or gluten sensitivity, as with the normal population. So it's not only the fact that you may have this genetic predisposition, but that given the genetic predisposition and you may now have developed some food sensitivity, that now you have Crohn's disease.
Oh, I wish there was some correlation, Doc. Well, you know, one day I'll be bleeding like crazy, and then I'll go weeks fine, you know, and other days, like, you know, till the sun goes down, I can't keep my eyes open. You know, it's just like it's nothing's ever the same. The fibromyalgia is either burning or itching or, you know, it's like... And you know, you touched on it. You don't take insurance anymore. I'm on Social Security disability. I can't get anybody to pay attention to me.
Right.
The injections, I'm supposed to be doing Cisnia. I can't find a grant now. It's $1,000 a month out of pocket, and I'm on Social Security disability. And, you know, let's not talk about what stress does to you in these conditions. You go to a gastroenterologist, I feel like I'm going to a plaster and I got a leaky roof. You know, he just keeps stitching the wall.
Well, I mean, I agree. I mean, so I'll give you one. This is one kind of, you want to talk about a yuck treatment? Well, the yuck treatment, there's a condition called C. difficile infection. C. difficile infection tends to be an antibiotic-related diarrheal illness. Well, one of the treatments that's a yuck treatment is something called fecal transplant. They take donors, typically family members.
It's like doing hookworms.
Well, they take donors from healthy people, and they test uh-huh. their stool, and they replenish their bacteria in their body with these good, you know, this healthy volunteer.
And thank you. This is my question. How do I get this?
Well, there's a doc in Albert Einstein in the Bronx. He's a GI doc that does this. There are some centers throughout the country that are doing this now. But basically, look, I will tell you that there are ways to rechange your whole gut biome. And that is, you know, we look at probiotics as being a very interesting idea in terms of helping the ecosystem.
Well, you know, Jamie raises an interesting question, which is, of course, this whole question about how we organize the economics of medicine. But if he wants something like what you're talking about, these experimental treatments, can't you call NIH in Washington and see whether or not they have a program that you could get into?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I would say that, you know, look, I understand financially this is a problem.
Unless you have a pulmonary disease, they don't consider the condition chronic, entitling you to additional care from Medicare. Yet the drugs I have to take are the most expensive drugs in the world. Yeah. And nobody cares that I can't afford them or I can't get a grant.
No, it's not that we want to be not
responsive.
I know.
I'm sorry.
We get that part of it. I agree with you. It's a terrible system. Hey, Jamie, thanks for the call. Appreciate it very
thanks,
much.
Thanks. I appreciate you listening.
Bye-bye. Let's go to Brian in Chatham. Okay, Brian, you're on.
Okay. I have celiac disease, diagnosed 5 years ago. Made a complete diet change, fantastically healthy until a year ago, when basically I was super fit, then all of a sudden it's just like I drove off a cliff. I got chronic fatigue with tremors. I've been to my regular doctor, then an internist, then a rheumatologist, about 9 different doctors, nothing at all. And one of my doctors wanted to put me on Cymbalta. And then not too long ago, I thought because I have the celiac disease, I read a lot, maybe I have leaky gut syndrome that's causing the problem.
Okay.
And but the problem is find, you know, there's so much information on the internet about it. One person said this is good and that's good and this is good, that finding out what the actual diet would be to help it has been almost impossible.
Okay. Well, let me first say leaky gut. unfortunately, leaky gut has this connotation that it's a lay public disclosure of something that is in actuality. It's an intestinal permeability problem where basically the intestines leak out so that what you eat, let's say if it's, since you have celiac disease, what you eat, gluten becomes, instead of a nutritional food, it actually is a threat or an invader. And it's recognized by your blood system as a threat or invader, and so your blood system now develops antibodies to it. What
right.
we spoke about in this microbiome, so this idea that you are made up of bacteria in your body, and that healthy bacteria in your body are very important, that if we look at you and us, if we look at who we are as a farm, and all you do is use pesticides, then you tend to, you know, lose some of what is necessary to keep the farm growing. And so for you, it may be that, you know, you had a celiac issue, but now you may have a dairy issue because you may have this what's called leaky gut, which is that you've now, the casein or the protein in dairy is now also causing problems. So what I would say is what we believe is that really repopulating your gut with very high amounts of good bacteria. Bifidobacteria tend to line the end of your gut. They tend to line your large intestines. They are seen as immunosupportive. They decrease inflammation. When you look at the Finnish, so Finland is a very interesting, because a breastfed child who is breastfed has a much less likelihood of developing gluten allergies, gluten sensitivities.
That's the New York Times article, right?
I got it. That's the New York Times article. It's basically, the New York Times is who has the guts for gluten. Please look it up. It's a really excellent article, really outlining.
I actually read that this morning. It's
okay.
Very good.
So very good. So that idea is that it's not necessarily only your genetic makeup, but is the fact that maybe you have, by some reason, you know, you're on a bunch of antibiotics, you ate foods that didn't have a lot of bacteria in it, and you may have, you know, your gut bacteria may be really deficient, so that repopulating your gut bacteria with bifidobacteria, lactobacillus, those are sort of the good bacteria, and then maybe Saccharomyces boulardii, which is a good yeast, that may help you in develop a less permeable intestine.
Now, can you take a pill?
Now,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes, you can.
Which pill? And then, does that include like yogurt? And then I read about fermented vegetables and things like that.
Yes. So yogurt has a certain amount of good bacteria, about a billion units for a very high, like Activia. That has about a billion units of these good bacteria. What we are looking at, a billion units, is like a needle in the haystack of how many bacteria you have. We're looking at trillions. And so, therefore, what I would say is, you know, look at that. But there are testing to see what your gut bacteria.
Hey, Brian,
like.
I wish I could give you more time. We're up against the hard break. Thank you very much for the call. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Okay. 1-800-348-2551. We'll be right back. There are two free phones. Let's go.
Support for WAMC comes from Identity Eyewear, Albany, New York. Identity Eyewear, it's what sets you apart. E-Y-E-D-E-N-T-I-T-Y, eyewear.net. Adelphi University, Hudson Valley Center's Graduate Social Work Program and Graduate and Undergraduate Nursing Programs, hosting an open house Thursday, February 28th, 6 p.m., St. Francis Hospital Medical Arts Pavilion, adelphi.edu/Hudson Valley. The 1850 House Inn and Tavern, Rosendale, New York. Newly renovated boutique hotel in the heart of the Hudson Valley. 12 guest rooms with modern amenities and located close to the historic landmarks, 1850house.com. In Ashfield Stone, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts. Quarry and fabrication. Rare and wonderful native stone of the Berkshires. Used for enduring landscapes and interiors, including countertops and floor planking. Ashfieldstone.com.
Our guest is the incredible Dr. Ronald Stram, Ron, there are two centers, SHRAM centers, one in Vermont, one here in upstate New York. You want to tell us a little bit about them?
Sure. So the SHRAM Center in Del Mar has been, we've been practicing now for 10 years, and we have a staff of about 9 of us now, and there are 2 acupuncturists, 2 massage therapists. We have a yoga instructor. We have one other doc besides me. We have 2 naturopaths besides me. And what I really see it is that really integrative medicine is about exploring the options that are available, whether it's nutrition, lifestyle management, food supplements, and this is really what we do. Whether it's pain management through acupuncture or massage, it's really the idea that integrative medicine really allows us to have a bigger bag of medicine. And both centers, the SHRAM Center in Del Mar and the SHRAM Center in Bennington, are certainly welcome and open to seeing new patients. The SHRAM Center in Bennington actually is an insurance-based model, and the naturopaths there do take at least 3 different insurances that some people may be covered under.
And what is a naturopath?
So a naturopathic doctor is a doctor who's trained through a 4-year naturopathic medical school.
So you're talking about MDs here?
They are NDs, naturopathic doctors. The first 2 years typically is a similar to medical school. They're trained in the basic sciences. They're trained in biochemistry and anatomy. They train in nutritional biochemistry as opposed to, let's say, in the conventional medical schools, typically biochemistry is based on a pharmaceutical approach. And then in their second 2 years, they tend to go to clinical rotations that include things like acupuncture, chiropractic, massage. They go to integrative medicine centers like us, and they train there. And they really are focused on a primary care practice. And then they have a specialty track where some of them go into oncology. And that typically is a 3-year extra part of their program. And they actually help and assist in sort of the cancer treatments beyond, you know, chemotherapy. But they look at, again, nutrition and lifestyle.
Thank you for that. Let's go to David in Columbia County. David, you're on.
Hi, yes. I'm trying to... am I on?
Yes.
Okay, I'm trying to make my question succinct. What is the difference between having symptoms for Lyme disease and the normal aches and pains of being over 40? And if you live in Columbia County, if you don't have health insurance, how can you get an accurate test?
Okay. Well, first off, the symptoms of Lyme disease, Lyme disease is one of the more complicated diseases I've ever seen in my practice. What I will tell you that if you have the normal aches and pains, it tends to be feel like the normal aches and pains, and they tend to go away. The symptoms of Lyme disease, migratory arthritis, meaning you got joint pain in your knee one day, and you got hip pain in your left hip and your right hip, and then it goes to your wrists and it goes to your elbows. You may have just bad fatigue. You may have night sweats. Those are probably symptoms of Lyme disease. The rash is... you know, maybe about a third of the people actually remember having a rash, and only about 18% of people actually ever remember getting bit by a tick. So that's, you know, I'd say that those are some of the symptoms, and the symptoms are very, very wide. The testing without insurance, I mean, the testing itself has limitations. I mean, you have one test, which is called a PCR test or polymerase chain reaction test, the sensitivity of it is about 30%, which you probably wouldn't take your car in to see.
It isn't very good.
Right, not very good. And then the Western blot, which is a more sensitive test, has about a 50% sensitivity. The problem, again, is that a lot of people get the initial PCR test as a screening test, and if they are negative, the Western blot is never gone.
Now, you're an emergency room guy, Ron. Yep. What if somebody walks into the emergency room, says, I think I have Lyme disease. Do they have to test you for Lyme disease?
Well, if someone says they think they have Lyme disease, I mean, I'd take a history and try to see if they do. There is the testing, but typically the initial testing is a PCR testing.
But I'm talking about the economics. In other words, are they obligated, an emergency room, if you walk in and say, I think I have Lyme disease, to give you the test?
No. you're not obligated. And but if someone says that I got bit by a tick, it was engorged, you know, likely I would treat people because the likelihood of
Well, likely you would, but you're not a, like the hospital. I mean, saying so basically in my situation, I don't mean to be speaking out of turn, but basically in my situation, basically you have a coin toss of a chance of getting diagnosed properly.
Well, I mean, look, I hate to say it, but right now, until there's a real recognition that this disease is prevalent, that people are suffering, that it's not just the 30-year-old person that may be anxious and having these symptoms, it's the 8-year-old, it's the 80-year-old. And that's what we're seeing. In my practice, we see anywhere from 8 to 80 years old that may have this this diagnosis. And, you know, what I would say is Congressman Gibson has been a real forerunner in trying to get legislation approved for better testing and better exposure for the medical establishment. And I applaud him. And that's I'm very encouraged by the fact that people are recognizing that it's a problem.
I'm not a Republican, but I do support him in that. So thank
David,
you very much.
Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Yep. Okay, let's go to Janine in Scotia. Janine, you're on.
Yes, hi there. I'm really excited that you're having this topic on your show. For about a year and a half now, I have been dealing with some very serious physical ailments. And back in the spring of last year, I did go see a holistic practitioner because I don't have health insurance. And she diagnosed me with Lyme and Candida. Now, it was not through the traditional blood testing. My symptoms have been fatigue, foggy brain, migratory achy joints, diarrhea, constipation, severe skin rashes that just pop up, different types all over my body, severe night sweats. Now, I started doing a lot of researching on my own. I read about diet. I'm actually a health and wellness professional, and I drastically changed my diet. I took out about 4 weeks ago all of the high trigger possible sensitivity foods because I was reading about leaky gut as well. And I pulled out soy, I pulled out corn, I pulled out artificial sweeteners, all of the foods that are supposedly trigger, I pulled out in 1 week of my diet. I even made sure the meat that I was eating was not from animals that was fed corn or soy. I felt amazing. I mean, everything, all of my ailments went away, and then a week later, I ended up in the hospital because my platelets dropped to 2,000. I was diagnosed with ITP. I was given a full blood transfusion. I was given two rounds of an IgA drip.
By the way, Jeanine, I'm so sorry, but a lot of people are listening who have no idea what you're talking about.
Okay, so
I'm sorry. I'm just assuming. I know that the doctor probably does. Trying to get it all out quick.
Of course.
Let me just say, ITP is idiopathic thrombocytopenia. It is a who knows why your platelets dropped, but they dropped to a significant level. A lot of people feel that this could be some either viral problem, it could be something that related with your spleen. Typically, there's a big search to make sure that you don't have anything bad, cancerous going on that would cause it.
Right. My white and my red blood cells were and still are at a very healthy level, so there is no, so cancer was ruled out because my white and red blood cells were very healthy, and there were no other signs. I had a full body scan. Nothing showed up to indicate cancer category, at least at this time. Now, I am still, now that I'm out of the hospital, I feel amazing. All of the symptoms as of the foggy brain is completely gone. This
okay,
is
but
the most
Janine,
efficient
Janine,
I've been in a year and a half.
Janine, we're going around a second time.
Right.
What's
my question is, I still am experiencing severe night sweats, and my platelets are still not holding. I was on prednisone. They just weaned me off and took me off the prednisone, and since that time, now I have to go back on Wednesday, but as of last Wednesday, my platelets had dropped again from 279,000 down to about 159,000. So my question to you is, could some of this, all of this somehow be related?
So the answer is yes, and what I would say is the issue is that Lyme tends to not just be, when people are real sick, Lyme tends to not be the only bug, Borrelia being the only bug. When you have real bad night sweats and symptoms like you're having, where you may have red blood cells that you're slightly anemia, the thought of babesiosis is a intracellular infectious disease that is a co-infection with Lyme disease. I would certainly explore that, but I applaud you for your diet and what you've done. It sounds like you're trying to get to the right, to making yourself better. And I'd say, look, you know, try to find someone who is going to look at you as a whole person, typically, and really try to figure it out and try to treat you.
Okay, and I was showing in my blood test signs of anemia.
Okay.
That was coming up. I will be reaching out to you. Thank you very much for being on this show.
Thank you, Janine.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you.
Right, let's go to Henry in Cooperstown. Henry, you're on. Talk to us, Henry.
Hello. Kind of an interesting day today. Evidently I'm experiencing the symptoms of, what is it called? Bowel disease, where I can't control my bowel movements. And so I come in from having gotten medicine, and I walk in and I said, that's Dr. Stram I spoke to last year. And I spoke to him about the Marshall Protocol.
Okay.
And I'm wondering whether or not the Marshall Protocol is still extant, whether you're still using it, or whether it's old hat by now.
Well, I mean, I think, so Marshall Protocol is using certain supplements and things like that to try to alleviate some or try to eradicate some of the symptoms of Lyme disease. I would say that, look, what we do now is, I mean, we really try to look at a lot of different areas to make people better. And the fact is that we are complex people that require sometimes very individualistic solutions. Marshall Protocol may be beneficial for some people and may not be helpful for others.
Well, I did have my annual physical at the end of October, and I did manage to get a tick off of the back of my neck, and I brought it into the doctor, and the doctor said, yeah, that's a tick. I said, now we all know. Some of us were Boy Scouts. We understand about ticks. But bottom line is that I'm just, I was away for a while. I was in London and with these same people, and they're seeming to get they still are getting a very, very good cure ratio, I believe. Dr. Marshall is, for the most part, in New York City.
Yep.
Probably know better than I do.
Yeah.
Henry?
A lot of these people, yeah.
I'm trying to get everybody in. I thank you for your call. I really do. I appreciate it very much. Thanks a lot.
But there is a relation between Marshall Protocol and Lyme's disease or irritable bowel.
Yep.
Thanks a lot. Okay, let's go to John in Springfield. John in Springfield, you're on.
Yeah, hi. I was listening earlier about the bowel symptoms, and you were talking about, I believe, probiotics.
Right.
And you mentioned that the billion in the yogurt was a little low, and because I've been having some trouble with that recently, and I bought at Costco just a the pills of probiotics, and it said 20 billion on there, and I wasn't really sure what that meant, and if that was, and the dosage on the bottle said take 2 daily, and I wasn't sure if that was, if I should increase that, or what to do.
Right. Well, so when you look at people that have celiac disease, it appears that they have a deficiency in one of those types of bacteria. It's called bifidobacteria. And so what I'd say is the 20 billion may be fine, but it depends on what you're looking to treat it for and what the 20 billion is.
Well, I was tested for celiac, and that was negative. And what happened was I was on an antibiotic, and then this was last July, and then 3 days after that, I just came down with these awful bowel symptoms, and I really haven't been quite the same since. It's gotten a little bit better.
Hey, John, I wish I could let you go on, but I can't because we're almost out of time. Ron, you want to answer?
Well, I would say is there's a test called a CDSA, a comprehensive digestive stool analysis, which can look at the amount of good bacteria in your gut and see what your digestibility is. I would say look into that.
Okay.
John, thank you very much. Appreciate it. I wish we could give you more time. Thank you very
Thanks.
Much. Okay. We are just about out of time. I want to apologize to Warren and Pauling and Rick and New Paltz. We're not going to have time for you today. I do apologize to you. Dr. Ron Stram, it's always such a pleasure to have you with us. Thanks for joining us today. You take on complex situations, which many people don't talk about, and we really appreciate that.
Thank you very much, Alan.
Support for Medical Monday comes from the hospitals of HealthQuest and HealthQuest Medical Practice, physicians offering primary and specialty health care in private office settings throughout the Hudson Valley. 1-888-525-4767 for appointments. Now, Ron, very quickly, can you tell us how people get in touch with you if they want you?
Stramcenter.com.
STRAM.
STRAM.com. We're the Stram Center. It's the phone number is 518-689-2244.
Give me that again.
518-689-2244.
Thanks again, everybody, for joining us on the Vox Pop. The phones are still ringing. Doesn't mean a lot. Our engineer, because we can't take any more. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Thanks to Ian Pickus and Sarah LaDuke for answering the phones. Our producer is Patrick Donges. I'm Alan Shartok. Don't forget that if you want to go hear Governor Patrick at the Colonial Theater in Great Barrington, no, in Pittsfield, Massachusetts, the Colonial Theater in Pittsfield, on Sunday afternoon, March 10th, 1 o'clock, here, Governor Patrick and his First Lady, Diane Patrick, having a very interesting story to tell. Give us a call, 1-800-323-9262. Again, 1-800-323-9262, and we'll connect you and get you those tickets. So, everybody, thanks so much for being with us. Stay tuned now for a news update.